Shavua Tov, everyone. Gemar Chasima Tova. Thank you, Aaron, for your words of introduction. I want to thank Robert Honig for his remarkable leadership at Project Ezra. And the sponsors of tonight, I want to thank B'nai Yeshurun for helping to arrange this evening. And I want to thank Becky Katz for not only arranging this evening, but really giving me a window in a conversation we had the other day into the world of Project Ezra. I had certainly heard of Project Ezra. I knew about some of the things that they do. But I was blown away to hear the extent of the services that they offer. It goes much wider than I ever imagined. Everything from helping people to find a job, to help people prepare for job interviews, helping obviously on the financial side of things, offering free services to people who are unable to afford a variety of services, everything from accounting to tutoring to therapy to dental work. It's just unbelievable the amount and the wide-ranging services that Project Ezra offers to our community. And it's an amazing thing to have this chance to speak tonight. And I thank you all for arranging and giving me this opportunity, especially so close to Yom Kippur. And of course, I also want to thank everyone who's here, because it says a lot about a community where people come out on a Motzei Shabbos after a busy Shabbos, many drushas. It was a very busy Shabbos. Shabbos seems to be getting shorter and shorter. And it says a lot about all of you for taking the time at this busy time of the year, on such a busy Motzei Shabbos, to come out and to want to learn together and to be inspired together. This time of the year is a time where a person has to choose between one of two attitudes. I could be the type of person who thinks only about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I want to be inscribed in the Book of Life. Hashem, I need your help. I need you to take care of me. It's a time where, understandably so, a person can become very, very selfish. I daven for myself, I daven for my family, I think about my own fate, I think about my own life. Again, the way that the Rambam, and really the Gemara, paints these days, our lives are tluyin va'omdin, unless we're convinced that we're absolute tzaddikim, or absolute rishon, which I don't think any of us have the confidence, or the, God forbid, lack of self-esteem, to think we're in either of those categories. These are days where HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving us the opportunity to do tshuva, and to draw close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and be sealed in the Book of Life by Yom Kippur. And needless to say, understandably so, Chayecha Kodman, my life comes first. Even the Torah's mandate of Ahavta L'Rehecha Kamocha is understood by the Rishonim that it's not possible to love someone else like you love yourself. It's just not possible, and the Torah wouldn't expect it of us because it's simply not possible to do. Rabbi Akiva, who says that v'ahavta l'rech kamocha is the klal gadol v'torah, Rabbi Kiva also says that if you find yourself in the desert, and there's one cup of water, and it's you and your friend, and you have to make a choice, I give the water to my friend and I die, I split the water and we die together, or I drink the water and I bid farewell to my friend, Rabbi Kiva says, chayecha kodman, your life comes first. A person has a right to provide for oneself before others, and certainly a person might come into these days thinking, if I want to be Zocha Badin, I need to daven for myself, I need to think about myself. Again, my closest family and friends. But in the paradoxical way, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says that's the exact opposite of the way to be Zocha Badin. If a person wants to be successful during these days, it's doing what we're doing tonight. It's thinking as a community how we can help each other in a variety of ways and immersing ourselves in the tzibur, becoming part of the tzibur. The Sfarim say that the gematria of the word tzibur is rachamim. If you want HaKadosh Baruch Hu's mercy during these days, it's not about focusing on oneself, but it's about turning oneself outward. It's about thinking about someone else at a time where, again, there's an inclination, there's a desire, an understandable desire to only think of oneself. We just finished the Yom Tov of Rosh Hashanah, and on Rosh Hashanah we're mamlich HaKadosh Baruch Hu over the entire world. We think about what does it mean to make Hashem king over the entire Bria, the entire universe. And of course, the way that we do that, as the Gemara says, is through a special tool called the shofar. We're mamlich HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the centerpiece of the day of Rosh Hashanah, is that we crown HaKadosh Baruch Hu over the world through the use of the shofar. And the shofar, there's many kavanos that a person has when we sound the shofar. Rav Sadia Gaon spoke about 10 different intentions that a person has when we hear the shofar. We think about the shofar of Har Sinai. We think about the Tekab shofar Gadol of Mashiach. We think about many different shofars. We think about the shofar at the inauguration of a king, the sounding of a shofar. Many different intentions And that's leaving aside all of the Kabbalistic intentions that one might have. The Mir Rosh Yeshiva, until his past 11, Rav Nosson Tzvi Frankel, an American-born, Chicago-born and raised, a person who led the yeshiva for 20-plus years, a person who suffered the last 28 years of life with a very debilitating Parkinson's disease, unbelievable, literally tens of thousands of Talmidim passed through the Mir Yeshiva under his leadership. And the last year of his life, the last Rosh Hashanah of his life, Rav Nosson Tzvi spoke in the Beis Medrash, the three Batei Medrash, the three main minyanim of the Mir Yeshiva, and he went around to each one with a message for people in preparation to hear the sound of the shofar. And he said to them, people ask me, what should the kavana be when one hears the shofar? What should you be thinking about? Again, there's a lot to think about. So many messages contained in that simple blast of the tekiah, the shvarim, the trua. And on the last Rosh Hashanah of his life, a leader of Klal Yisrael, a person with Mesiras Nefesh, became a great Rosh Yeshiva and accomplished so, so much in his lifetime. And there were so many thoughts that one can imagine were going through his mind. And he said, people ask me, what should you think about when you hear the Tekiah Shofar? And he said, I'll tell you what the Kavana is for Tekiah Shofar. During Tekiah Shofar, think about someone else. That's the Kavana for Tekiah Shofar. The Kavana for Tekiah Shofar is, think about someone else in the room. When you close your eyes and you're thinking, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I hope that sound of the shofar blasts my Yitzhahara out of my body. I hope that sound of the shofar brings personal redemption for me and my family. I hope that sound of the shofar helps me to be a better Eved Hashem. Rav Nosson Tzvi said, put all that aside and think about someone else in the room. Don't be selfish during these days. Think about someone else who needs our help. Rav Meir Zlatowitz, an individual who we could argue single-handedly revolutionized Torah study in the world through the creation of Art Scroll. How many people, thousands, tens of thousands of people, hundreds of thousands of people, have access to Svarim, to Jewish texts, that they otherwise wouldn't have access to if not for the work of Rav Meir Zlatowitz and his team at Art Scroll, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. As a young man, Rav Zlatowitz was attracted to a Hasidic Rebbe who came to America in the 1930s, settled on the Lower East Side until his passing in 1967, established his Hasidic court, the Rebbe of Kapishnitz. And the Rebbe of Kapishnitz also, one year on Rosh Hashanah, he got up. And he was discussing also how the shofar reminds us, another kavanah of shofar, it reminds us of Akedas Yitzchak, the ram that replaced Yitzchak, when we hear that ram's horn. And he asked a very simple question. Think about the slichos during these days. Think about the davening, your machzer. Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, we're always coming back to the Akedah. What an awesome accomplishment, Akedas Yitzchak. So the Kapishnitz Rebbe said, I don't understand. If a Kadosh Baruch Hu told you to do something, if God Himself came and spoke to you, I remember this conversation so many times when I taught high school students. Everyone, you probably have this conversation. It's a classic high school conversation. Right? If God would just speak to me out of the heavens and tell me to do X, Y, or Z, then I could do it. But it's hard, you know, I never heard Hashem speak. Avram got a whisper in his ear, take your son to the Akedah. So we say, it's very hard to offer your child as a sacrifice. But if you know you heard it directly from God, if God Himself came down and spoke to you and told you to do something, as difficult as that might be, of course you're going to do it. What was the Nisayon of the Akedah? The Rebbe of Kapishnitz says, what was the Nisayon of the Akedah? What was so hard about the Akedah? And he shared his own personal experience, his own memory. He said, I remember being taken by the Gestapo to their headquarters. And I remember the Nazis, Yamach Shemam, taking advantage of me. And he said, I closed my eyes and I was prepared. Whatever sacrifice I would need to make, I was prepared to do that. He said, I had the resolve, I had the strength, I had the courage to take on the Nazis, to dial Kiddush Hashem if necessary. He said, but there was one thing that broke me. He said, when I saw other Jews, when I saw other people being beaten, being taken advantage of, being killed by the Nazis, Yamach Shemam, he said, that I couldn't handle. That was too difficult for me. My own suffering I could handle. But to see someone else suffer, he said, from personal experience, I couldn't watch the Nazis beat another Jew. So the Kapishnitz Rebbe said, the first 9 tests of Avram Avinu were all tests for Avram. Hashem, you want to do whatever you want to me. Avram says, Hineni, I'm here for you. I'm ready to serve you. Says the Rebbe of Kapishnitz, you know what was hard about that 10th and final test? You know what was so hard about watching the Akedah? It was that you were asking me, a Kodesh Baruch Hu, to inflict pain upon another human being. To harm my own child. That I can't do. That's an impossibility. It was impossible for Avram Avinu, and yet Avram found the strength to do it. The Kapishtus Rebbe said, that's the schus of the Akedah. That Avram was prepared to listen to a Kodesh Baruch Hu, even if it meant harming another person. Because that notion of harming another Jew is so foreign to everything that we stand by. The Vilna Gaon's primary Talmud, his ultimate Talmud, his Talmud Muvak, was Rav Chaim Volozhiner. I want to read you a line from the introduction to the Nefesh HaChaim, the magnum opus of Rav Chaim Volozhiner, a comment from his son, Rav Yitzchak Volozhiner. We're talking about people who learned Torah day and night. They were not on the front lines of Project Ezra, or so it would seem. But Rav Yitzchak Volozhiner said, my father, more than anything, more than emphasizing learning and more learning and more learning, or davening with Kavanah, my father, this is what he writes, the son of Rav Chaim of Volozhiner, the student of the Vilna Gaon, Hayaragil lehochiach osi, my father would constantly remind me, al shirai she'eini mishtatef b'tzara da'achrina. Anytime he felt that I wasn't focused enough on someone else, I wasn't concerned for my neighbor, for my friend, for the tzibur, v'ko hayadibro elai, here's what he would say to me, tamid, shezeh kol ha'adam. That this is what life is about, more than anything else. The essence of our lives is lo la'atzmo nivra, is not to live for oneself, is not to be focused solely on oneself, rak lahoil la'achrini, to be able to provide for another in need, kechol asher yimsa b'kocho lasos, in any way that you're able to help. There are so many ways that we as a community can get involved with Project Ezra, whether it's volunteering your services, whether it's giving tzedakah, whatever you can do to get involved, because says Rav Chaim Volozhiner, that's what life is about. That's the essence of life. My father would remind, Rav Chaim Volozhiner says, he would remind his children more than anything else, a Jew has to know that we don't live for ourselves. God, as it were, programmed it into our very being. Hashem put it into our bodies. I once read an amazing insight about the human body. Amazing, amazing insight. As Jews, in halacha, we always favor the right side. We favor the right side in terms of how we get dressed. You're supposed to put your right sleeve on first, your right shoe on first. The Shulchan Aruch says that when one showers, one should wash the right side of one's body first. We hold a mitzvah object. When one recites Kiddush, we hold the cup in our right hand. And I once saw an insight in a sefer. If that's true, if the right side is the side, for whatever reason, based on deep mystical reasons, the right side is chesed, we favor the right over the left, midas adin. If that's true that the right side is so important, so why did God build our bodies with our heart primarily to the left? It's situated somewhat in the middle, but it's more to the left than to the right. Is there a part of our body that's more critical, that's more essential to our life than our very heart? And I saw an insight once in a sefer, and it's a simple insight, but you'll remember. You know why our heart is on the left side of our body? Because our heart is not for ourselves. The heart that's positioned on my left is on your right. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling us, I didn't give you your heart, I didn't give you your emotions, I didn't give you your senses, I didn't give you your feelings for you to only think about yourself. I gave you that sensitive Jewish heart to be able to think about other people, to direct those emotions, to direct those feelings outward. There's an amazing pasuk in Tehillim in chapter 17, Perek Yizayin. David HaMelech davens, Shamreini ki ishon bas ayin. Protect me. Watch over me. Ki ishon bas ayin, like the pupil of the eye. Hebrew language is an amazing thing. It's filled with secrets. Why is the Hebrew word for the pupil of the eye ishon? Aleph, yud, shin, vav, nun. Why is that the Hebrew word for the pupil? If you look in the writings of the Radak, in his commentary on Tehillim, right there on the spot, Perek Yizayin, the Radak says, whenever you have a vav, nun at the end of a word, Vav Nun always implies a miniature version of something. So Yom Kippur is coming up. It's called Shabbat Shabbaton. Right? Whenever you have a Vav Nun at the end of the word, it means a miniature version of something. Yom Kippur is a smaller version of Shabbos. The truth is, we don't think of it. We think of Yom Kippur as the ultimate day. Shabbos actually is of greater significance in halacha. A violation of Shabbos is more severe than a violation of Yom Kippur, as hard as it is for us to imagine. So it's a miniature Shabbos. It's a Shabbaton. The Ishon, the pupil of the eye, is called an Ishon. Ish is a person. Vav Nun means a miniature version of whatever the word it's modifying. So the Ishon means a miniature person. Why is the pupil of the eye called a miniature person? Because if you talk to a person, and you give them the respect to look them in the eye when you're speaking to them, you'll notice a miniature reflection of yourself in their eyes. You'll see a little miniature reflection of you. But Rav Mordechai Gifter explained, why did Hashem make it that way? Why did the Kodesh Baruch Hu make it that when you're conversing with another human being, as your heart on your left is on their right, why do you see a miniature version of yourself in their eyes? Rav Mordechai Gifter explained so simply. Because when you talk to another human being, especially when we're talking about our fellow Jews, when I look at the person, I want to see the full person in front of me and just a small version of myself. That I want their needs to be big in my eyes, so to speak, and to see just a small reflection of myself. To make myself small, whether it's an insight in humility, whether it's an insight in chesed, there's a lot of ways you could explain Rav Gifter's Vart. But I always have to see my fellow Jew as bigger and more important than myself. To have the humility, to have that sense of submissiveness to the tzibor, and to be a team player. Person comes to shul on Yom Kippur night. For the men, we wrap ourselves in our kittel, we go under our talis. Rabbi Saul Salanter used to warn people, you come to shul Yom Kippur night, and you're putting on your talis for Kol Nidre. Someone asked him, what should the kavana be by Kol Nidre? Rabbi Saul Salanter responded very succinctly. You know what the kavana is? When you're putting on your talis, and you throw the strings over your shoulder, make sure you don't smack the guy behind you in the face. That's the kavana for talis on Yom Kippur. To make sure that I'm thinking about someone else. To make sure that my own spiritual success, or my own success in general in life, is not impinging upon the happiness or the well-being of another human being. Rabbi Aryeh Levin was the tzaddik of Yerushalayim, a contemporary of Rav Kook, an amazing, amazing, legendary figure, whose chesed, the stories of his chesed, his tzedakah, his sensitivity, I mean, they're unbelievable. If you haven't read the biography from Simcha Raz, highly recommended. He passed away in 1969. He was assigned by Rav Kook in the 1930s to be the chaplain for the Jewish prisoners. And there were many at that difficult period in Jewish history. With Mesiras Nefesh, he would go and he would visit people. The story, again, the stories of his tzidkus and his tzedakah and his chesed. I mean, it's legendary stuff. His grandson, Benji Levine, was living in America and he would spend the summer now and again with his grandfather in Yerushalayim. And he was all excited to be in the presence of his heiliger grandfather, to spend time with the one who was known as the tzaddik of Yerushalayim, Rabbi Levine. And he said he went one summer to be with his grandfather, and they were going Friday night. Benji Levine said, I was going Friday night to eat by my aunt, my grandfather's daughter, and I was expecting a beautiful Shabbos meal. I was so excited for the Divrei Torah my grandfather would tell, this Miros, you know, a long meal where we could really sing every word of the whole bencher, you know, to really get into it, to share Divrei Torah late into the night. And he said he was so surprised that his grandfather kind of rushed through the meal. Very quickly they showed up, Shalom Aleichem, Yisheschayim, Kiddush. They ate the delicious meal that his daughter had prepared. And that was it. A quick meal. Where's the Divrei Torah? Where are the Zmiros? You know, where's the Shabbos experience, basking in the light, the aura of Shabbos? And on the walk home, he asked his grandfather. Benji turned to his grandfather and he said to his grandfather, I don't understand, you know. They say you're the tzaddik of Yerushalayim. You'd expect a little bit more from me. Yerushalayim Er Kodesh. I mean, okay, it's something else in America, but I came all the way to Yerushalayim to learn from your ways. So he said, he says to his grandson, what were you looking for? He said, I was looking for a spiritual experience. So he said, hold on a second. Don't you realize your aunt, she has a lot of children. She works very hard during the week. She worked hard to prepare this beautiful feast. You expect me to come to her house after a long week on a Friday night when she's so tired, and you expect me to mach lebedik on her cheshbon? He says to his grandson, let me teach you something. That's not called frumkeit, that's called selfishkeit. That's not called frumkeit, that's called selfishkeit. Don't show up at someone else's house and try to think, what can I get out of this experience? Someone who's providing for you a delicious meal, and now you're going to go without any sensitivity to their needs. That's what made Rav Aryeh Levin the type of person that he was. We get so caught up sometimes in our own Dalet Amos. We get so caught up in our own lives. We don't stop to realize that we're just a tiny part of the planet. I once read an amazing quote really stuck with me. It is well to remember that the entire universe, with one trifling exception, is composed of others. There's a lot more others than there is me. And it's important to remember that. Let's do something unconventional together, okay? If I can indulge everyone here for just a moment. I want to try something together, okay? I don't know how hippie-ish about it you want to get into this. I brought along a book. It's called Visions of a Compassionate World. It was written by a Jew, Menachem Eckstein. It's the only book that he published, originally in Hebrew. Parts of it were translated originally into Yiddish. It was published in 1921. The original title of this book in Hebrew is Tanae HaNefesh LaHasagat HaChasidus, Prerequisites of the Soul for Attaining Hasidic Consciousness. Okay? It's an amazing volume. It's a meditative work. It was translated into English a number of years ago. And he describes something which is a really good way to get out of your own Dalet Amos, just for a couple of minutes. For a couple of minutes, as we stand here a couple of days before Yom Kippur. He has what he describes here in chapter 3, a visualization for ego transcendence. Okay? Let's try this together. You can close your eyes if you want. It's late. You can take a nap also for a couple of minutes. I'll wake you up for the rest of this year afterwards. But it's a simple meditation. But if you do this once in a while, we would be so much less petty. The silly machloksim that sometimes tear people apart. The refusal to call the person who we got into a fight with 5 years ago over some silly thing that you hardly even remember what it was. You would have settled it long ago. Let's try this visualization for ego transcendence. Okay, I'm just going to read you it's literally just a couple of lines. There are no major chidushim here. But just to remind ourselves that the world is composed of a lot more others than there is self. Here's what he writes. Begin by envisioning planet Earth, as if you're actually seeing it from outer space. Okay, let's try this for a second. Visualize its continents and its oceans. Envision mankind as he lives on Earth, the different nations and their national borders. It's a big world, 7.5 billion people. The populations of each of these nations. Visualize this clearly in your mind's eye until you feel that it is actually before you. Picture HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Picture it from God's perspective. Just zoom out a little bit over the entire universe. See the domestic animals that you know so well. See them in their natural habitats. See the wild animals in the deserts and forests. See how they prey on their food. I spent 4 days this summer in Jackson Hole, Wyoming with my wife. It's a part of the country I'd never seen before. It's people I'd never seen before. You get out of your space a little bit, you know, your regular routine of wherever, you know, Teaneck, Bergenfield, New Milford, maybe over the George Washington Bridge and back, for those of us who have that schuss every day. Yeah, you zoom out a little bit. It's a big world. And it's all Hashem's world. See the domestic animals. See the wild animals in the deserts. See the house pets that humans enjoy. And the tiny house pests like mosquitoes and flies. See the great elephant, the snakes, the reptiles. See how they move and eat, are born and die. See all the birds as they fly in the sky. Hear the sweet tunes of their chirping. See all the fish in the rivers and oceans, how they swim, how they're devoured or caught, how they're born and how they die. See all the grass, the planets, the crops, the vegetables, the thorns, the flowers. See all the gardens, the orchards and fields. See all the great trees of the forest. See these all bud, develop, grow. Picture a plant growing and then wither and die. See each of these things in all of its details, then see all of it as one great whole. First begin by envisioning the very place you're at. So now let's go the opposite direction for a moment. Okay? Just in your mind's eye, even though you're here, just picture you're sitting here in B'nai Yeshurun in the old main shul, as it's lovingly called. Then visualize yourself in it from afar. Not just like zoom up a little bit, right? Now we're hovering kind of like a drone flying over the shul. How small it is in comparison to your community. Picture B'nai Yeshurun in the context of the greater Teaneck community. Now picture your city within the context of your state, within your country, your continent. Zoom out to see the entire planet Earth from above. See how you are just one human among billions, just one creature amongst all the others. And now zoom back in to yelling at your kids, you know, for leaving their socks on the floor, right? Or your husband or wife for not putting that dish that was on the table into the sink. Or for, you know, forgetting to... whatever it is, whatever silly thing we get stuck on. Right? When we zoom out and we remind ourselves the world is filled with a lot more others, and Hashem is just as interested, by the way, in that mosquito in some African jungle as He is in us, even though on a certain level, banim lamakum, we're Hashem's children, and the Kodesh Baruch Hu cares for us and provides for us and is involved in our lives in a maybe more precise way, on some level, but it's all part of Hashem's world. So how do we have the audacity to become so self-absorbed, to get so caught up again in our own lives? Doesn't the Hebrew word for life, chayim, isn't it interesting, notes of Chaim Shmulevitz, that the word itself is plural, chayim? It's plural because life is only meaningful if you live it in the context of others. When a person says my way or the highway, then my opinion is the only one that matters in the conversation because I'm the loudest in the group, then God forbid, that's not really living, says Reb Chaim Shmulevitz. Once read, you know, why do Hasidim start to wear Rabbeinu Tam tefillin when they get married? The Shulchan Aruch says that people who are very pious wear not only the Rashi tefillin, but they wear the Rabbeinu Tam tefillin as well. It's a different order of the parshios of the tefillin. Where does it come from? What's it based on? Machlokas Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam was Rashi's grandson. Why didn't he follow his grandfather? I'm not sure. Okay. But Hasidim begin to wear, not at their bar mitzvah when they first wear a tefillin, they put on Rabbeinu Tam tefillin, they start to wear that extra pair of tefillin as they reach the age where they're getting married. When one gets married, that's when one wears Rabbeinu Tam tefillin. Why dafka then? We assume a person is married, now they're on a higher spiritual level, they can handle wearing a second pair of tefillin. I once read a very simple explanation. It's really important when you get married to know that there are other opinions. Even though we paskin like Rashi. We don't always fulfill every opinion, but it's really important if you want to be a pious Jew. When you get married, it's important to know, even though there's a Rashi, there's also a Rabbeinu Tam. And that opinion also carries weight. Halacha l'maisa. It's not a theoretical idea. You know, the other person's idea, it's like, it's a cute idea, it's a nice idea, thank you for sharing it, but now I'm going to discard your idea and move on with my life. To realize that there are other voices in the conversation. To realize that there are other opinions, there are other people. Before you know it, we're going to be at the Yom Tov of Sukkot, Zman Simcha Seinu, a time where we rejoice. The Jewish people experience the ultimate simcha of sitting in the sukkah, of basking in the Ziv HaShchina. And yet, in the heights of that joy, the Rambam reminds us that if you want it to be a real simcha, make sure that you invite someone to your sukkah who doesn't have a sukkah. Make sure you give tzedakah to someone who needs money for yontif, who's not able to afford some of the luxuries that maybe you're able to afford. And then amidst all of that simcha, we kind of deflate that joy through the reading of Koheles, a very depressing sefer. Hevel havolim akol havel. Koheles declares, Shlomo Melech declares, it's all futile, everything's a waste. It knocks out some of that joy, some of that effusiveness that we feel on the Yom Tov of Sukkot. Why do we read Koheles on Sukkot? Some explain it's to balance the joy, we shouldn't get carried away with the simcha. Again, like the Rambam says, it should be a simcha shal mitzvah, not a simcha of frivolity or levity. Rabbi Jonathan Sachs, last year, Sukkot time, published a beautiful essay. And I'll tell you what he says. You know why we read Koheles on Sukkot? Zman Simcha Seinu. Listen to his words, it's beautiful. Of all the festivals, I'm sorry, I'm going to do it in an American accent, I apologize. Of all the festivals, Sukkot is surely the one that speaks most powerfully to our time. Koheles could almost have been written in the 21st century. Here is the ultimate success, the man who has it all. The houses, the cars, the clothes, the adoring women, the envy of all men, who has pursued everything this world can offer, from pleasure to possessions to power to wisdom, and yet, in surveying the totality of his life, can only say in effect, meaningless, meaningless, everything is meaningless. Hevel havalim akol havel. How could that be? This person has it all. Kohelet's failure to find meaning is directly related to his obsession with the I and the me. And it's glaring. Pay attention to the words of Koheles. What does Shlomo Melech say? I built for myself. I gathered for myself. I acquired for myself. The more he pursues his desires, the emptier his life becomes. The more I, the less satisfied a person feels. There is no more powerful critique of the consumer society whose idol is the self, whose icon is the selfie, and whose moral code is, quote, whatever works for you. This is the society, he's talking about our times, that achieves unprecedented affluence, giving people more choices than they have ever known, and yet, at the very same time, So an unprecedented rise in alcohol and drug abuse, eating disorders, stress-related syndromes, depression, attempted suicide, and actual suicide. A society of tourists, not pilgrims, is not one that will yield the sense of a life worth living. Of all things people have chosen to worship, the self is the least fulfilling. A culture of narcissism quickly gives way to loneliness and despair. And therefore, on Zman Simcha Seinu, we remind ourselves, if you want to have real simcha, so what are you doing for someone else on Sukkot? What's your kavana when you hear the sound of the shofar on Rosh Hashanah? Who are you thinking about as you think about the Akedah? Reminding yourself how hard it must have been for Avram Avinu to even, with God whispering in his ear, to inflict pain upon another person. How about the Kohen Gadol? How about the tefillah of the Kohen Gadol davens when he walks out of Kodesh Kadashim on that one day of the year, on Yom HaKadosh, on Yom HaKippur? He has such a strange tefillah. You know what he davens? He davens, Hashem, you know, I don't want you to listen. Please, Hashem, reject the tefillah of the person who's traveling on the road, who's davening that it shouldn't rain. That's what the Kohen Gadol davens. That's part of his tefillah when he walks out of Kodesh Kadashim. He's negating the tefillah of a fellow who's traveling on the road, who's traveling back and forth, Aliyah L'Regel, who's asking Hashem, please make my journey a little bit easier. I don't want it to rain. So the Bali Musar explained, look at the power of tefillah. It takes no less than the Kohen Gadol on Yom HaKippurim to try to stop the tefillah of some Jew who's walking and says, God, you know, if you could just hold up the rain so I can get home without getting my shirt wet. It takes no less than the Kohen Gadol on Yom HaKippurim to negate such a tefillah. But I want to hear a different explanation. That's what the Kohen Gadol is focused on. He comes out of the Kodesh Kadashim and Yom HaKippurim, and that's what he's focused on. This fellow who's davening that it shouldn't rain. I want to hear an explanation from my friend Rabbi Shai Schechter. He said, the Kohen Gadol is so disturbed on Yom HaKippurim, again, the day where we have to make a choice. We can be part of the Tzibor, or we can go under our talis, whether it's physically or metaphorically, and just daven for ourselves. The Kohen Gadol comes out of Kodesh Kadashim and he says, Rabbono Sholom, if there's a Jew in the world who's only davening for himself, doesn't he know that the world needs rain? He himself needs rain. This fellow has farms, he has fields. He also needs rain. He's so caught up in himself in the moment that he says, Hashem, please hold back the rain so I can get home a little bit more easily. The Kohen Gadol says, that's so selfish. The Kohen Gadol says, I have to fight against that on Yom HaKippur. I have to negate a Jew who's being so selfish on such a day. I can't allow such a tefillah to exist in the world. Not on Yom HaKadosh, not on the day that the Jewish people are seeking the mercy of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You want the mercy of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? You want the racham, and racham is gematria tzibur. Be a part of the tzibur. Think about other people. Connect yourself to what's going on around you. In a couple of weeks, we'll be back at Bereishis. We're going to start the Torah over again. We did a meditation, a vision of a very big world. Let's recall a world once upon a time that was actually very small. A world that consisted of nothing more than four people. Adam, Chava, Cain, and Hevel. And Cain, tragically, he kills Hevel. He becomes the first murderer of all time. Hevel is the first victim of all time. And I want to ask you a question that seems insensitive. Cain, terrible crime. You just killed 25% of humanity. That's a big deal. Needless to say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was not so happy. Did Hevel do anything wrong? We're not one to blame the victim. We're sensitive to that. Did Hevel do something wrong? We like to assume that a person can't be killed unless HaKadosh Baruch Hu signs off on it. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu allowed, as it were, that Cain should be able to kill Hevel, could it be that maybe Hevel had done something wrong as well? I once saw an explanation from Rav Eliezer Sirotzkin. You know what Hevel did wrong? Let's roll back the tape for a second. Cain and Hevel are trying to formulate a relationship with God. And Cain brings a carbon, and Hevel brings a carbon. And Hevel's very successful. Vel Cain, vel minchaso, lo sha'a. HaKadosh Baruch was not interested in Cain's offering. And what's the picture on Cain's face right after that? We see Cain. The Torah shows us Cain. He's depressed. His face is hung low. He's very down in the dumps. Where's Hevel in all of this? Why is Hevel not walking over to his brother and putting his arm around his shoulder and saying, hey, pick yourself up, don't worry about it. Try again. You know, God didn't like that offering. It's going to take some time to figure this out. The world just got started. You know, let's try again. I'll give you some tips. My carbon was accepted. Where was Hevel? Why was he there to talk to his brother when he was going through a tough time. Where was he? Do we find anywhere in the Torah that there was such a conversation? And the answer is we don't. And therefore, says Rav Eliezer Sirotzkin from Tels, he says it could be HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, normally when we have a big world, if you don't reach out to a friend, to a neighbor, to a relative, to someone who's going through a tough time, Hashem says, I'm not so happy with you, but, you know, I can let it go. But Hevel, come on. It's not like there were so many people to take care of. You had one brother. That was the entire population of the world other than your parents. How did you not notice? You were so caught up in your own ruchnius. You were so immersed in your own karbon and being successful that Hashem should accept your karbon that you didn't bother to stop to turn to your brother and be mechazek him. You didn't give him tzedakah, you didn't offer a word of support, you didn't give him some practical advice how to bring a karbon and be matzliach. And with this we can understand the psukim. Because you have a very strange pasuk. It's a dangling pasuk. Vayomer Kain al Hevel Achiv. The scene that describes Kain actually killing Hevel. Vayomer Kain al Hevel Achiv. Kain turns to his brother Hevel. And he says to him, Vayomer Kain. And he says, "Nu, what does he say? Doesn't say anything. Pasuk continues. Vayibi Yosem Basada. They were standing in the field. Vayakam Kain al Hevel Achiv Yargeyu. Kain rises up and he kills his brother Hevel. What did he say to his brother? Vayomer Kain al Hevel Achiv. What did he say to him? What did he say to him? And the answer is, he didn't say anything to him other than Achiv. He said, brother. And what was Hevel's response? The Torah is highlighting. Hevel doesn't respond. It says the Ksav Sofer in his writings on Bereishis. Nira li, ki achar shera Hevel es Kain berisho, pirish mimen. When Hevel sees that Kain's carbon is rejected, I don't want to associate with that person. I don't want to be associated with someone who's so unsuccessful, someone who is deemed apparently as a wicked person by God. Otherwise, why else would he be suffering? Why else would Hashem not accept his karma? So Hevel decides, I'm distancing myself. Al tischaber l'rasha. I have a mission in Pirkei Avos. Hevel says, I don't want to be associated with Kain. V'chara l'kain ma'od al zeh. And Kain was so broken over this. Shia achiv sonei oso. The only other person in the world, my own brother, flesh and blood. My brothers rejected me. Vayomer Kain al Hevel Achiv. And Kain says to his brother, he says, Hevel, brother, Shiratza Shia Ba'ach Ve'imo. Treat me like a brother. Ve'i Be'osim Basada. Now they're in the field, and there's nothing. There's no response. He won't even look at him. He won't offer a word of chizik. Nothing. Vayakam Kain al Hevel Achiv. And again, the Torah emphasizes Achiv, that Kain rose up against his brother Hevel. Hainu Shekama loved the Kas Verogas. He got so angry at him because he says, what kind of brother are you? How could you be a brother? This is not a brother. This is not someone I have to care about because clearly he doesn't care about me. And you see it a little bit in the continuation. The Ksav Sofer ends there. But I think it's so obvious to us in the continuation of the Psukim. Vayomer Hashem el Kain. Hashem turns to Kain and says, Ei Hevel Achicha. You just murdered your brother, 25% of the population. Where's your brother Hevel? And what does Kain very painfully respond? Kain responds, Hashomer Achi Anochi. This is a brother? This person who ignored me in my pain, in my suffering, in my religious failure? He wouldn't even look at me. He wouldn't have a conversation with me. He couldn't pay attention to me. That's not a brother. Kain has the audacity, but understandably so, to say back to God, this is not a brother I have to provide for, not after the way that he treated me. We have to learn to look out for each other. We have to learn to talk to each other. One of the things that Becky and I were talking about on the phone the other day is we also have to have the courage that when we need the help, to reach out. And to have the confidence that an organization with the sensitivity and the care and the confidentiality of Project Ezra, the professionalism, your privacy will be guarded and you'll feel so much better to help yourself. There's an amazing pasuk in Mishlei. Da'aga b'lev ish, says the pasuk, yashchem. When a person has the worries of the heart, Mishlei Perek Yudbeis, yashchem. Literally, suppress it. Don't deal with it. Jewish people sometimes are pretty good at that. Da'aga b'lev ish, you've got all sorts of worries, anxieties, just keep ignoring it. Keep burying it. Keep hiding it. But there's an amazing Gemara in Maseches Yoma. The Gemara says that's actually only one of two ways to interpret the pasuk. Rabbi Ami v'Rav Asi, Chad Amar, Yashchena means Yashchena midaito. Push it out of your mind. Suppress it. Get rid of it. V'char Amar, and the other one says, don't read it Yashchena, but rather Yisichena. Talk it out. Yisichena la'achirim. Reach out to someone who can help you. What Chazal are identifying is, if a person can suppress a certain worry that they have in a healthy way, then that's fine. But there's times in life where suppressing it is the worst thing you can do for yourself. And not helping someone to get the help that they need is the worst thing you could do as a friend. By not reaching out of a fear that maybe I'm overstepping, maybe I'll embarrass them, you allow that person to continue to suffer. Yes, yisichena la'achirim. Talk it out with someone else. Chaim needed someone just to talk to him. That's all he needed from his brother. That someone should talk to him. And Hevel was too absorbed to talk it out. The Rebbe of Husyatin, one of the great tzaddikim from the Rizhin dynasty, he said one time he hired a handyman to fix his couch. And the fellow came, the repairman came, and he was fixing the couch. There was a tear in the couch, and he's fixing the couch. He did a nice job reupholstering the couch. And afterwards, the Rebbe thanked him, and the Rebbe was checking out his work. And the Rebbe said, you missed a spot. There's a little tear in the back of the couch. So the handyman said to him, he said, Rebbe, the tear in the back of the couch is up against the wall. No one sees that part of the couch. You don't have to pay money to fix that part of the couch. And no one sees it, no one looks there. And the Rebbe of Husyatin said to the handyman, he said, in my family we were taught that it's most important to perfect those areas that no one sees. The area behind the couch. Jewish people are pretty good sometimes, you know, keeping things behind the couch, sweeping it under the rug. We were taught that the most important thing to perfect are those areas that nobody sees. So let's be honest for a moment, since we're standing in days where it requires a lot of honesty. Let's be honest. There's no person in this room. There's an amazing bumper sticker that the Chafetz Chaim Heritage Foundation, I think, gave out last year on Tisha B'Av. Right? Not to judge other people, because every single person has something going on, and we all know that to be true. Everyone has a tear behind the couch. Everyone has something that's not working out. Whether it's financially, whether it's emotionally, whether it's shidduchim, whether it's this or that. Everyone has something. So yisichena la'achirim. We have to be a community where we're able to talk to each other. And if someone's not able to talk and you see the pain on their face, so help them to talk. Reach out to them. Help them to deal with that space behind the couch. And if you have that space behind the couch, you have that tear behind the couch, so have the courage to deal with it. You'll feel so much better when we're able, yisichena la'achirim, again, to trust the professionalism of this awesome organization, to get the help that we need, to be able to help someone, to help themselves. The Chafetz Chaim told such an unbelievable story. The Chafetz Chaim used to share a story that the Dubna Magid, Rav Yaakov Krantz, the Dubna Magid, this goes back to the 1700s, Rav Yaakov Krantz was once walking down the street, just to show you the importance of being able to reach out to someone else. The Dubna Magid, the Heilige Dubna Magid, a contemporary of the Vilna Gaon, was walking down the street one time. And he saw a young boy escorting a blind man through the street. And he saw this young child providing for this elderly individual. It broke his heart. He could see the fellow was blind. He was walking. And this kid was taking care of this older person. So the Dubna Magid, his heart broke. He walked over to the young boy. And he said, who are you and who's this man? He said, this is my elderly father. Where are you going? There's a soup kitchen not far from here. We go every day to get something to eat. My father doesn't work. We don't have food at home. We live in a cold little hut. The Dubna Magid said, what do? You don't go to school? How do I go to school? I can't go to yeshiva. I can't go to school. I have to provide for my elderly father. The Dubna Magid said, no way. There's no way this is going to go on. You're a young Jewish boy. You need to get a Jewish education. It's unreasonable for you to tend to your father. At this point, the older man starts saying, who are you talking to? He says to the kid, who are you talking to? And the kid's not sure what to do. He's embarrassed. The Dubna Magid explains, no, sir, I'm going to take care of you. Come back to my house. I'll give you a warm meal, a change of clothing, a warm bed to sleep in. The Dubna Magid took the old man and the child into his home, and they lived with him. And they lived with him until this man's dying breath. And the Dubna Magid adopted this child. He took him under his wing and provided for him. Sent him to yeshiva, got him a little bit of an education. Turned out that this little kid was pretty bright, pretty bright kid. He was pretty successful in yeshiva. And as he grew and he grew and he grew in his Torah study, he went on to become, I take you back to when I walked into Tuvia's Svarim store in Muncie, probably 15 years ago. And I walk over to the shelf, I'm perusing the Parsha Svarim, and I see on the shelf a new sefer just printed. Obviously not a new sefer, it's set on the side, from the Ksavim of Rabbi Shlomo Kluger. A huge volume, I pick the volume up off the shelf, It's about 600 pages long. It's called Chachmas Shlomo. And I see on the side of this volume, it says Bereishis. Unbelievable. You know, this is just on Sefer Bereishis. That's unbelievable. That means the whole set, the five volumes, must be 3,000 pages of Chidushei Torah. And then I look back on the shelf, and I notice that next to the volume that says Bereishis on it, there's a volume also about 600 pages. You know what it says? Noach. Noach. They had printed up to Vayera at that point, probably about 2,000 pages of Chidushei Torah. Can you imagine a little kid walking down the street who could have gone his whole life without a Jewish education, but because someone walked over and someone said, I want to help. I could see that this is not fair. I was able to recognize that this is not reasonable that this child should have to live this way. And he took him into his home and he provided for him. And Rav Shlomo Kluger has hundreds of svarim in Drush, in Halacha, Shailos and Tshuvos. We're talking about the Gaon of Broi. An unbelievable, once-in-a-generation Talmud Chacham, who was saved from a life of poverty and amaratzus because someone cared. So I want to leave you with one final medrash and a short, cute little story that I like to tell. There's a medrash in Tana Debei Eliyahu. The medrash says in Tana Debei Eliyahu, and this captures really everything that I was trying to say tonight. V'kach Amar Lehem HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yisrael. A direct message, a baskel from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Here's what God says to the Jewish people. Banai Ahuvai, my beloved children, a few days before Yom Kippur, let's see what Hashem has to say to us. Klum chasarti davar she'avakesh mikem. Is there anything that I don't have that you can give me? You know, we think sometimes, Hashem, look what we do for you. You know, we give you Shabbos, and we give you kosher, and we give you davening, and we give you all sorts of, we give you learning, we do all these mitzvos for you. Hashem says, I have everything. There's nothing that I'm lacking. Klum chasarti davar shavakesh mikem. There's nothing that you can give me. Uma ani mavakesh mikem. What can you do for me? Hashem says, you want to bring something to me? A little present? Rosh Hashanah, being mamluch me over the world? Yom Kippur, a time of being close to Hashem? Sukkot, we'll sit together in the sukkah. You want to bring me a little holiday present? HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you know what you can do for me? Uma ani mavakesh mikem. Ha'ein ani mavakesh mikem ella. The only thing I ask of you is that you ohavin zeh zeh, that you should love one another, that you machabdin zeh zeh, and that you respect one another, that you think about one another, that you look out for one another, that you try to do things to help one another. Project Ezra is an amazing resource in our community. If you can give tzedakah, so then give tzedakah. If you're able to help out financially, help out financially. If you can volunteer your skills and services, so do that. I'm going to give you an address right now. Becky, B-E-C-K-Y, at EzraWithAHey.org. Okay, I got it right. Ezra with a hey. With an H. What did I say? Hey. Okay, that's good. Ezra with a hey is not going to work. Try Ezra with an H. Becky at Ezra. Now you remember. Becky at Ezra with a hey. Whatever you can do. With a H. Just making sure everyone's still awake. It's been a long Shabbos. Reach out. Reach out. Get involved. Ask what you can do. If you can tutor someone, we welcome your services. If you can give up any amount of tzedakah, get involved, whatever you can do to help. And if you need the help of the services, the amazing resources that Project Ezra offers our community, don't be shy to reach out. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, the greatest gift that you can give me more than anything else is if you can just give me the love that one Jew should have for another Jew. Shetu mechabdin zeh, that you look out for one another. I leave you with a cute little story that I once read. I don't know if it's a true story, but it's an important story. The story is told that there was a volunteer in Stanford Hospital. And there was a young girl who had a debilitating disease. And the only one who could cure this girl, apparently the doctors felt, was her brother. To perform a blood transfusion, the brother apparently, when he was younger, also had this disease. He was a couple years younger than his sister. And they said to the boy, you know, are you prepared to give your blood to your sister? It won't hurt that much, but, you know, they explained to the boy the procedure. And he said, will it help my sister? Will it save her life? Hopefully, we hope so. You have the antibodies. Hopefully, you'll be able to provide her with the blood that has, you know, the ability to fight off such a dreaded disease. And the little boy said, okay, if it's going to help my sister, I'm prepared to do it. I'll do what I can. And they hooked the boy up to the machine, and they began the blood transfusion. And almost immediately, he looked over to the bed next to him. He saw his sister. His sister lies in the bed, lying next to him. And he saw immediately as the blood was being pumped into her body, they immediately saw her face was becoming a little bit more flush. And then all of a sudden, the boy started to turn very pale. And he looked at the doctors, and he said with tears in his eyes, "Am I going to start to die right away?" He didn't understand that giving blood to his sister wasn't actually giving away his blood. It wasn't going to take his life. But in this childish understanding, when the doctors explained to him, "You're going to give your blood to be able to save your sister," he was prepared to give away everything. Sometimes we think when it comes to reaching out and giving to someone else, how is it going to affect my life? How is it going to impact my well-being? But we have to remember as Jews, when we give, we get so much more in return. When we give life and we daven for someone else during these days, when we give tzedakah, to give tzedakah, money, which is sometimes called b'chazal, dam and blood, when we give of our energies, of our resources to help someone else, we're not giving life, we're getting life. So Mirtz Hashem, we should give generously, we should get involved. I want to thank everyone for coming tonight. I want to wish you all Gemar Chesima Tova. And Mirtz Hashem, if we continue to look out for one another, Kadosh Baruch Hu will look down on his children and bless each of every one of us with an amazing year ahead. Thank you so much. Wow.